Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs.
Hi, and welcome back to Your Family Dog podcast. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith, and I'm here with Tina Spring. And today we're going to talk about something to which I have to confess that I am guilty thereof. So hopefully Tina will convince me to get back into training and to take care of the problem. My husband would appreciate it if I'd take care of the problem, but I have to confess that I allow my dogs to rush the door. Now, I will say, somewhat in my defense, it's not much of a defense, but it's a little bit of a defense, that if I ask them to wait, if I would say to Zuzu, look, sweetie, you just wait right there, okay? Hold on a second, then I'll let you through the door. She will do it, and Clementine will too. But I don't always ask them to wait. And sometimes they get so excited as we're heading to the door that I don't catch them in time to tell them to wait. And they're not trained to just wait at the door until it's open. Unlike my grand dog, Rosemary, when my daughter got her dog, she decided that with three, possibly now four, small children, it was absolutely essential that Rosemary wait at the door, no matter what, whether it's coming in or going out. That was just something she really needed to have her dog do, because doors get opened and closed, perhaps unsupervisedly, if that be a word. And so she worked really hard, and Rosemary is very, very good at doors. Rosemary will, however, go through gates. She has not transferred the whole knowledge of I wait at the door to I wait at the gate in the yard. So that's not nearly as much of an issue. So I know how to fix the problem. I just haven't done it. So that's my big confession. I'm a terrible trainer, a terrible dog mom.
So you're not, right? You're just busy and you have other priorities, just like all of us have. The reason I thought we would talk about door dashing today is because I all of a sudden am getting a lot of requests for help with it. And I think it's because the weather's getting nicer here, right? So kids are going to play outside. People are wanting to leave their doors open so that the fresh air can come in after being cooped up in the house for a couple of months.
That's what I would also say, too, that my backyard is fenced in. So during the nice weather, we do leave the door to the backyard open, and the dogs can come in and out when we're home. They are inside and locked up when I'm not here. But yeah, so I just thought it was because you secretly read my mind, or my husband's mind, that said, you know, we need to fix this problem.
No, I'm not. I gave up my mind reading business years ago. So when you said in the opening that you know how to fix it, what would you use to work on it?
What I would probably do is every single time we come to a doorway, whether it's going into the garage or it's going outside, or it's like Zuzu will come into the bathroom with me. Anytime we come to a doorway, she will have to sit and wait until I open the door and release her to go through it. And if I do this consistently enough, she'll begin to go, okay, fine. And then I fully expect that as I start to open the door, she'll stand up. So I'll have to have her sit again, close the door. Pretty soon she'll figure out, you know what, if I just leave my bottom on the ground till mom says, okay, this door is going to open a whole lot faster. So, but the problem is, of course, is that my dogs are older. Zuzu is now 7 or so, and Clementine is 4. So I'm talking about, you know, years of having to practice this sort of utter door abandon. It's going to take me longer to retrain them than it would have if I had trained them correctly in the first time around. So I do understand that. The other thing is I think I can teach them that if the door is closed, you need to sit. If the door is open to the backyard, you can come and go as you please. So it's a different phenomenon. A door open is different than a door closed. What we're really looking for is for dogs to not rush the door when it's closed. So I think that I can help them to discriminate between the two. What do you think?
Maybe. I mean, my dogs don't rush closed doors. They rush open doors.
See, when my dogs know that we're getting ready to go, you know, or one of us is getting, you know, a jacket on or whatever, they will run to the back door to wait. We can't wait till we can get out the door with you because it looks like we're going for a walk kind of thing. And so it's the anticipation that I get to go with you that causes them to rush the door. Or if, like, for example, when my daughter Ellie arrived today with some of my grandkids, when Edward came to the door and I opened it, the dogs were so excited to see the kids. Clementine slipped past me to go out to say hi to the kids. And I would have preferred that she sit until I tell her she can go. So it's more like when there's activity around the door, we don't want to miss any of that activity because it could be really good for us.
Right. So have thoughts. Questions. So if you come to my house to visit, my dogs are crated before I open the door. Part of the reason is because I want to avoid my dogs getting super amped up and jumping on people at the door. I also want to prevent door dashing. So none of my dogs have ever escaped out the front door from inside their crates. And really, somebody who's coming over is ideally coming to see us. They're not coming to visit the dogs. The dogs are just ancillary to the household. And so I want the dogs to settle down and to be polite at their initial greetings to the people. And maybe it's just my sensitivity. I don't like walking into a household that there's, you know, two or three dogs at the door. It's very uncomfortable for me. It doesn't feel safe.
Right. No, I agree. And oftentimes, because of the nature of where the way our house is set up, when I know somebody's coming, like today, I got busy and got distracted. I will have the dogs outside and they just go outside and I don't let them in until everybody's in and settled. So I kind of do the same thing. I may not crate them, but they are not readily available for the door. It's just today I was busy cooking something and they arrived and I hadn't had the dogs outside. What I should have done when I saw Edward coming up to the door would have been, hey, girls, let's go, and escorted them outside before I let Edward in. That would have been the smart thing to do, but that's not what I did because I'm not always smart.
Well, we're out of practice, right? Sometimes we're just living our life. So if I was going to teach dogs to stay away from the door when people are coming in, I would do that one dog at a time. I wouldn't try to teach it to two dogs at the same time.
I think that that's absolutely right. The other thing I might do is train a, because I've done this with clients, is train a find it. Someone comes to the door and the immediate response is I show them some treats, find it, and I toss it away from the door. So they're off looking for treats. So when somebody comes to the door, if I do this often enough, they're like, oh, this is my cue to run into the other room because that's where the treats are going to appear.
That works.
Yeah.
So I use, when I'm teaching it in class, right, if I have a customer that we're working on it, I usually use a combination of a settle mat and then what are called marker cues to get the dog thinking, backing up thoughts. So what a marker cue is, I don't know that it's new in dog training. It definitely is getting talked about more than it used to get talked about. But marker cue means that, and I'm sure Karen Deeds can do a better job explaining this, but this is who introduced it to me. So marker cue means it's a word or sound that not only says to the dog, good job, this is what you're getting paid for, but it informs them how their payment is going to happen, right? So it might indicate that I'm going to throw something for them, like a ball. It might indicate that we're going to play tug. In this case, it's indicating where a food treat is going to be delivered. So I use toss as a marker cue to say to the dog, hey, the treat's going to end up flying in the air behind you. Right? So what I want is to get the dog thinking, backing up thoughts, right? So if over many repetitions, toss means the treat's going to be behind them. What what I'm watching for is to see, is the dog continuing to try to crowd the door? Right? So over many repetitions, I don't know, maybe 20, the average dog, in my experience, is going to start giving space to that door or gate or whatever it is. Now, again, I would at the same time be working through subtle mat exercise. So teaching the dog, like, hey, could you go to your place? So once I have a dog who's thinking, backing up thoughts, because I'm using toss, I'm also hopefully building a subtle mat exercise or a place cue, so that if in theory I've built both of these quite strong, one or the other will hook the dog's brain. Doesn't really matter to me which one. So once I get a dog who is thinking those backing up thoughts when I approach the door or the gate or whatever, if they have a settle mat, I might put the mat where I can toss a treat and it'll land on the mat, just so that we're having extra backing up. And that mat, again, is not going to be up against the door. It's going to be way back behind the door.
Do you use a manners minder in this at all? Do you find it
helpful? I have in the past. I've used a treat and train or a manners minder, and it works really great.
We should probably explain what that is, because not all of our listeners may know what a manners minder is.
So a treat and train or a manners minder, it's the same piece of equipment. It just is called by two different names, is a remote dog trainer. So you can hold a remote in your hand and have it dispense food at a distance from you. I think it does up to 100 feet to get reinforcement off of your body so that you don't have to have a throwing arm that can throw 100 feet. It works really great, especially for teaching things like a downstay.
Yeah, I've had mine for a while. So
yes, I have a number of them, and I hoard them and then like loan them out for people to try. And then they can decide if they think it's a good fit for their household and then either buy it or replace it for me. As a matter of fact, I think there's one out for loan right now, and I don't remember who has it. So that happens to me all the time. I need to keep better track of that. Anyway, so once I have a dog who has figured out toss and is going to their mat, or just toss and they're leaving the gate alone, then I start doing jiggle the door handle, toss, jiggle the door handle, toss. Again, I usually start on a door the dog just don't care about. They don't care whether or not they go in and out of my bedroom door. They do care about the front door. Like, that's more interesting to them. So we start on doors where it's easy for them to be successful, and that if they blow it, it's not a big deal. And then I'm going to increase the difficulty as their skill is getting built. Again, always trying to set them up to be successful. So can I have the door, like, can I jiggle the door handle? Can I crack the door open and close it again? Can I open the door and have it more open? Like, how does the dog start to learn, like, oh no, I'm just going to lay here and she's going to do weird stuff with the door or the gate. And then can I eventually walk through it back and forth and then go and reinforce the dog for not rushing the gate or the door? And I'm just going to repeat that over subsequent options until I'm able to give the dog like a cue that says, hey, I'd like you to hold up, and then start practicing with the door. When I get to doors that matter, I use a long line and I tether the dog's collar to something heavy enough the dog can't move it, so that if they attempt to get out the door, they can't. So I'm preventing the behavior that I don't want to have happen by
and then rewarding the behavior
by accident.
Right. So I think that there's a certain element of management that you need to consider in all this, because you want your dog to be successful, but you still need to start to push the boundaries a little bit. So if you're going to push the boundaries, you have to make sure that you're also allowing them to be successful, because every time they practice what you don't want them to do, then you're taking a big step backwards.
Right. And you can do all sorts of cool things. Like, I have had customers who have driven two engineering stakes in the ground on the other side of the door and put saran wrap across it so that when the dog tries to get out, they just bounce off a clear plastic. It's pretty funny, the look on the dog's face when that happens. They're like, what?
I
just
can only imagine.
There was a force field. All right. So that's my big convoluted dog trainer. This is how we're going to do it. All right. Now I'm going to give you the quick answer. If you only have one dog, this is a lovely answer, which is have a container of stale Cheerios near the door. And when you go to open the door, throw a handful of Cheerios into an adjoining room and then go out the door.
Yeah, I've done that. That actually works nicely.
When you go to get the mail, throw a handful of Cheerios. Is this sexy? No. This is not high-end dog training here. This is like survive the day dog training. So it could also be their kibble. Totally fine with you doing it with their food. If you don't want to give them Cheerios, my dogs do it for their food, not for Cheerios. But it has the same effect, right? I throw a bunch of Cheerios into the adjoining room and I can go out and get the mail and come back in and drag my Amazon packages in the house like some sort of weird beaver that brings, instead of sticks, I bring boxes.
You know, the other thing is that I was going to say is that as you throw it, put a cue on it. You know, when I'm throwing the treats, I'm saying find it or toss or some cue. So that, you know, you're right, it's somewhat ill-elegant, but it works, and over time it really will work. And if you add this cue, then they're going to think that that word means I run over there because treats will rain from the sky.
Well, I mean, honestly, most adults are yelling mean things at the door anyway, trying to get the dog back. You can just use whatever phrase you've been using, right? So get the heck out of here. Go to your bed, like whatever it is, get back. You bought vile
back.
Yes. Back. Right. We sound like we're calling chickens. But what I would say is, I think the piece we miss is that we're training the dog, whether we're paying attention to it or not.
Absolutely.
Now, would I love you to do like the big highfalutin official dog trainer version? Sure. But that's not going to happen for most families. Most families are going to have to practice. Now, if you have a dog who already dashes out the door, you have a completely different problem because the dog has already figured out that going out the front door makes everyone very excited. So for those dogs, you do have to use greater management and you have to practice even when you're not going to go out the door. So this is where, like, when I go to switch laundry and grab laundry out of the laundry room or out of the bedroom, I'm going to jiggle the door handle, throw kibble into the living room, and then, like, on my way to the bedroom to grab, you know, the mediums to go in the washer. After those are in the washer, I might jiggle the door handle, throw kibble in the living room, and then go and clean a toilet. So I'm getting in more repetitions of jiggle the handle, throw, jiggle the handle, throw, because what I want to do is kind of break that connection of the dog that jiggling the door handle means run out like a ninja. I want them to go, no, she's good. You never know where we could go out the door like a ninja, or there could be kibble in the living room.
Right.
So it's slow. Like it, but it works.
Yeah.
It works pretty well.
Yes, it does.
And it's easy to set, you know, a little Gladware container with treats that are non-perishable that you could just walk over, grab a handful, throw them, and then be on your way.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't done it in the new house, but in past houses, if you knew where to look in my house, you would find in every single room, there's going to be a container of treats because I never know when I'm going to need to reinforce a particular behavior or redirect a dog or whatever. So it's really handy to have those treats readily available. And you're right, little Tupperware containers tucked behind, you know, on a bookcase or tucked behind a picture or whatever is really handy to have. So I agree.
Well, especially in problem areas.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Especially, I mean, around one of the problems I found, though, is we got Miller moths, you know, those little pantry moths. Mm-hmm. And I had treats. I had like Cheerios, which were non, you know, they're
not food forever,
but they were in a pot on top of a bookcase without a lid. And I forgot that they were in there. And that became...
The moths love them.
Yeah, they did. They did. It became a little garden spot for the moths. Mm. So do have lids. That would be my piece of advice here is if you're going to do this, make sure your containers have lids. Ones that you can easily rip off. I get that. But make sure they have lids so that you don't attract additional friends.
And if you don't want to use food, it's fine. Stash some toys. Right? Stash a squeaky toy behind the blind.
Yeah.
Or behind the book on the bookshelf or behind the picture frame. So like it's sitting on the top of the bureau or whatever. Grab the tennis ball and throw it and then go on about your business. So that the dog starts, I don't care what you use, as long as the dog starts to learn that when you approach the door, they're supposed to move away from the door.
Right. And
I wanted to learn.
Yeah, I had a client whose dog had just incredible gastrointestinal problems. I mean, just everything. And so, I mean, it was basically down to powdered chicken is what we could use. And that's just, or freeze-dried chicken, which just does not have a lot of durability. So we used a lot of squeaky toys. And that worked really well for him until he swallowed one of the squeakers. We didn't realize he chewed a hole in we called it Jane. It was this little, like, thing. And we thought maybe because we were taking it on walks, so he would hold it on a walk. We would use it to distract him on a walk, all these kinds. We were using a lot of squeaky toys for a lot of different things. And at one point, the squeaky thing was missing. We were outside. We couldn't find it anywhere. We thought, oh, it must have fallen out. Well, it didn't. He swallowed it. And 6 weeks later, there was emergency surgery. So anyway, do be careful. Whatever you use, be careful if you use things with squeaker toys. That if the squeaker is suddenly missing, you might want to make sure you can find it. Just a little.
Right. FBI. Yeah. I mean, Kong makes squeaky tennis balls. Those tend to work pretty well.
Yes. My dogs love those. In fact, we just got some from our bark box, one of which is shaped like a squirrel. One is shaped like a fox. It's a cute little tennis ball. It has little ears. I'm doing my ear impression. And a tail. And
how cute. It
is so cute. And the squirrel has little ears and a tail. And then there's a very cranky cat one. Cat's not very happy being a tennis ball for a dog, but it also has ears. But the dogs love them. And it's great because especially the squirrel is such a bright color. I can see it anywhere. So, nice. But that's a real special toy. The other thing is what I have found is when I'm doing stuff like this, sometimes it's really important. Like I will go out, I don't buy tennis balls very often, but I'll go out and I'll buy, you know, a 12 pack or a 6 pack or something of tennis balls so that I have a new tennis ball to offer. Because sometimes what I find is that the Zuzu will chase any tennis ball that comes along. If I really want to reinforce her, well, there's nothing like a brand new tennis ball. Just the newness of it is so exciting. I can't stand it. And so if I really need to have something that I think is a super high reinforcer, and I know she's going to just like be over the moon about having access to a brand new tennis ball means a lot to Zuzu. So you can think in that terms as well, is that maybe you're using the same thing, but there's a really interesting study that was done with dogs that, like people, dogs like novelty as long as they have novelty that they can approach on their means. Nobody likes, it's the old, like my brother used to do this, you know, close your eyes and open your mouth. And I'm like, absolutely no way, you're my brother. And who knows what you're going to give me. I still hate that game. And now I'll try pretty much any food, but I got to be able to see it, right? So everybody likes novelty, but in their own terms. So the same thing with dogs is that dogs will actually, even though a toy is not a kind of toy that they normally play with or they find to be kind of boring, they will choose the new one over the more fun toy simply because it's new and novel. So you can use that to your advantage to introduce new or novel toys as a way for, you know, a really good reward for your dog.
Right. So that brings us to the next part of the exercise. So this is going to sound silly, but it does tend to work really well, which is confuse your dog. So lots of dogs sneak out when people are going out. Smart dogs sneak out when people are coming in. So they like lay in wait. So your hands are full of groceries and then they're whoop out the door. And
have you been talking to Clementine?
And thus beginning this is great Clementine. Game of catch me if you can. So yes. for that, what we've done for the last week with my client who was having this problem is she intentionally, every time she comes home, jiggles the front door handle, opens the door and throws in either food or a toy, closes the door, grabs the groceries and goes in a different door. Right. So the door that the dog anticipates is going to open is not the one opening. And so that has worked really well because now the dog is a little off their game about how to sneak out. And mom and the kids think it's hysterical. So she sometimes sends the kids to other doors just to throw the dog off while she's sneaking in a third door. They're making a really big game of it. And the dog has gone from trying to sneak out of the door to trying to guess which door they're going to come in. So they just changed up the trick. She also asked the oldest boy to, once he makes it in the house, to grab a handful of the dog's dog food and pay the dog for being on his mat while the other stuff is coming in. So the current
I like that.
Yeah, to enlist the kids in helping.
Well, I also like the fact that you're rewarding the dog for doing what you want him to do while you get the other stuff done. So the dog learns, hey, I stay here, good things happen to me. So I like that system.
Yeah, and mom actually added another, she's like, I don't know why I didn't think about this before, but she pulls the car into the garage. She unloads the groceries into the garage. She closes down the back of the car. She closes the garage door, and then she carries the groceries in from the garage. Because the way their garage is laid out, the hatchback can't be up while she's getting groceries out of the car with the garage door open. So the dog was sneaking out. So yeah. Just now, if the dog sneaks into the garage door is closed, the roll-up door. So he can't go anywhere.
Right. So he's the same thing.
He's like, well, that's dumb.
I open the garage door. I unload the groceries into the garage. Then I close the garage door before I go in the house.
Right. So now when the dog tries to sneak out the garage door is already closed and she's carrying groceries in with the house door to the garage open, but the big garage door closed. So the dog is like, well, that is not as exciting as it usually is.
Right.
And then again, treats are happening in another part of the house.
Yep.
So lots of ways to do it. They also sometimes have the 8-year-old grab a handful of kibble, open the back door and throw it out in the yard. The dog goes out. The 8-year-old closes the door and is done with the dog while they're doing the things. But the kids were way happier to help with the dog than they were to help with bringing the groceries in.
Oh, I'm sure. Bringing groceries in I got home. I did a big shopping yesterday, got home and I'm like, Brad, can you help me with the groceries? Says, no, I can't because I have to do this Zoom call. So yes, he really did have to do a Zoom call. But nonetheless, I was like, thanks.
Well, I don't want to do all the duplication of effort.
What?
Right? Like, I think of all the duplication of effort. Like I take it off the shelf. I put it in the cart. Take it from the cart to the conveyor belt. I take it from the conveyor belt into the poop thing and then the bag. Then I take the bag and put it in the cart. Then I take the cart to the car and I take it from the bag into the car and then from the car into the house. And then I have to put it all away and then I have to cook it and clean up after.
It's a lot of steps. It's a lot of steps and they need to be done because, you know, like we all like have to eat and most of us get our food from the grocery store. But it's also just, you know, it's lost its luster for me. It's kind of like dusting. I've dusted for, what, I'm 65, so I've been dusting since I was, I don't know, 8. It's lost its wonder for me, dusting. It just doesn't have the same thrill. Vacuuming is not nearly as exciting as it was 30 years ago, you know?
No.
No. Even, well, I
mean, the good news is everyone's probably getting a new vacuum, and that makes sense.
I did get a new vacuum. So that
does help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. Even that's losing.
There's trade-offs, right? Like I got a Dyson Animal stick vac for the house. Love it.
I do too.
But I have to empty the receptacle all the time.
Yeah. So anyway, there is.
There you go. I could keep dogs away from the door by just coming in with the vacuum cleaner.
Yes, I get the vacuum cleaner out, and Zuzu's like, "Can I go in the backyard, please?" Because I would. I'm very sensitive.
Oh, so. I mean, Jack is like, "That's it. I'm going to the mommy store."
Yeah. So
that's why my house looks the way it works. It's to be kind to the dogs.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I can't, Brad. I'm sorry. I can't possibly vacuum. It's too traumatic for your dog. Actually, Clementine doesn't. Nothing phases Clementine, but everything phases Zuzu. That's why we call Zuzu the simple dog, because she's very simple. And Clementine's supposed to be helper dog, but we call her the unhelpful dog. So anyway, so we have simple dog and unhelpful dog. But it is what it is. And like I said, because of my own perhaps innate laziness and it's good enoughness. It's actually not good enough. So I need to up the good enoughness, if that would be a term.
Well,
I'm
so
all kinds of terms today.
So the door dashing, the big thing is, I think we often think of it as not being safe for the dog. It's also sometimes not safe for the people going in and out over the dog. Right. Yeah. So I do think it's an important thing to work on. I think you can treat it through management. You could just decide, okay, well, the doors aren't going to open until the dog is secure. That's an option. Cumbersome one, but it works, right? You can also be like, okay, well, I'm going to put the dogs in the backyard before I open the front door. Totally works. You could also just do training. So I'm kind of down with any of those options. And it's not difficult. It's just working on it. So
yeah,
trying to work on it at the time, you know, when you're carrying groceries in and you have to pee is probably not the greatest time to work on it.
No, it's not. The other thing I would say is that if you're having a hard time finding, I should take my own advice here, just so everybody knows that one of the things I do with my writing is that I block off time on my calendar and I try to treat it as if it were like a dentist appointment, that nobody can mess with my writing time. Because if I don't take care of it, nobody else is going to say, "Julie, you should go write for 2 hours, you know, or whatever." So I think you can do the same thing with training. But remember, you don't have to block off an hour at a time. You can block off 5 to 10 minutes a day. It may take you a little bit longer. Or just do things like, you know, when you're, you know, brushing your teeth, throw some treats, practice toss while you're brushing your teeth, or, you know, whatever, you can do it. And I tell people, I said, you know, when I'm teaching you new things, I'd like you to work on it 4 to 5 times a day for 4 to 5 minutes. And if everybody in the house does that, then the dog's going to get a significant amount of training every day. So it doesn't have to be, I'm going to dedicate hours upon hours to train my dog. You can do it in reasonable chunks of time. And you can either do it when you have a few spare minutes, or you can actually schedule those few spare minutes and put them on your phone with an alarm.
Well, and more, I really do just train the dogs for 2 minutes at a time.
Yeah, yeah. It works. It does. It really does work. People don't believe me. I'm like, you don't have to carve an hour at a time, because I don't know anybody who can carve an hour out of their day. But you can carve.
Well, I mean, I could. Minutes.
Yeah.
I could. I could carve an hour out of the day, but I'm not going to.
Right. So, but I can't really write in 2 minute increments. that
somehow. Well, you could, but that would be bad.
It would be bad. And so I've got, I've actually been very pleased with myself because in the last couple of weeks, I've got a few more chapters written on the new novel. So I'm pleased there. And also, too, I do just sort of want to say that I have been, I've become a finalist in the Wishing Shelf Awards, which is an award program for independent publishers that's out of London and Stockholm. So I was very excited that The Beastkeepers was a finalist.
Yay!
So, all right. Well, I think that that's a really good summary of DoorDashing. Remember, you can fix this problem. It may take a little bit of time, but it doesn't have to require a huge effort. And you can do it in, 2 to 5 minute increments at a time, and your dog will learn. Whether it's an old habit like Zuzu's, or whether you have a new dog like Rosemary, this can be taught. So
yes, and I would say I think after you've had a DoorDasher, then you're like, the next dog will not be a DoorDasher.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree.
Because they're like a lightning strike when when they're DoorDashers. So
I agree.
And it's dangerous, and they get hit by cars in front of kids. It's terrible. So just working on it is a biggie. And yes. I think it's hard when kids are like bebopping in and out. For that, I just secure the dog.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. So, all right. Well, thanks, Tina. I'm so glad you brought it up so that the world can know what an inept trainer I truly am. Let's put it this way. Maybe I'm just a lazy owner. People would say, oh, you must have really well-behaved dogs. And I'm like, they're good enough. My clients' dogs are great. They're really well-behaved. My dogs.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of the cobbler's kids have no shoes.
Yes. Yes, I agree. So.
Like I got home actually relatively early from work yesterday and was in the bed by 8 o'clock.
Good for you.
No, it was lovely. So I get it. I'm just, sometimes I'm tired and I don't feel like doing the thing.
Yeah, so. I get that. All right. Well, thanks. And we'll see you all next time on Your Family Dog.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.